post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Hello and welcome to the Near Post. With me in the studio is Lucy Harry-Kuehl-Zelick on account of her regular injuries.
Regular injuries? Is that what it is now?
Well, you've got a gammy toe and last week you had crutches.
Now I'm off the crutches, thankfully. Thank God. It's about time that I'm off the crutches because that was an absolute nuisance. But it's good to be back and at least I don't have to do the radio show standing. So it doesn't matter what happens to my toe, I'm always going to be here.
Nice, nice. And we have a surprise tonight. No Eamon Flanagan, who's taken the private jet to go and watch a football game somewhere.
I heard he actually went to Spain to do some player recruitment.
I think he might even be lining up as an ex-coach of Liverpool.
Actually, he's parked on my nature strip and he's at Lynham High School this evening, actually.
Thank you. And with us, that is Terry Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the super sub, Henry.
G'day.
And you're on the Near Post with me, Patrick Bourdier, your host, filling in for Eamon, and we'll try and struggle on through. And hell, we might even throw in a couple of jibes on Eamon's behalf.
It's not a show without that, is it?
No.
We don't have him to poke fun at, so without that, I mean, it's not really a show, but that's why we've brought Terry in, because we know that he's full of controversy, so he's going to make our show even more interesting.
Let's hope.
So coming up in the first half hour, 38 days to the World Cup, and Australia is ready to spring into the next World Cup. Unfortunately, it's the 2020 World Cup, and we're not at all ready for our own footballing World Cup.
Actually, we could surprise everybody by hosting it in 2020, because they won't be ready.
That's right. Yes, it's a clever move on the part of the FFA. Tonight, our big topics are the ACL. Adelaide are through, Melbourne are out. Hikari United, the PNG champions of Oceania. Woo-hoo. North Queensland are moving to Asia. We're going to have Paddy Time. I've got a
we love Paddy Time here every week.
Particular quote organised from in relation to Shakira and pop music of the young
the
people.
The pop music world is breaking out into the world of football.
We're certainly breaking out into the world of Paddy Time anyway.
It's got to be better than Ricky Martin, I say.
And we'll also go through Terry Henry's best World Cup moment.
We didn't get to, I know that mine was pretty dismal according to you guys last week, so now it'll be interesting to see what Terry's got to come up with.
Well, he's been practising. He took the day off work today, going through his story. It's polished. It's ready.
Gathering information.
Yeah, researching it vigorously on the net.
Just in case anybody from my work is listening, I was actually off because my wife was ill. Right, thank you. Just in case anyone is listening out there.
Well, you can download the podcast and play it to them if they question you. But if you have an inquiry or simply like to test our football knowledge, you can do so on email flanagan.eamon@gmail.com. We are podcast on www.nearpost.blogspot.com, on iTunes no less, and on halftimeheroes.com.au, and we are streamed on 2XXFM.
I say it every time, we are coming to a cinema, to a radio, to a telephone, to a television near you. We are everywhere.
Television?
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah, we're
everywhere.
Being filmed. Well, it's the next natural step, really.
It is,
the show.
Absolutely. I mean, private jets and player recruitment in Spain, watching football games overseas. It's a natural progression for the Near Post fans.
Well, our listenership is, skyrocketing, I'm sure.
Could you imagine a Near Post on 3D? What a scary thought.
Before we get into the news, which Terry Henry is ready to deliver for us, I've got the show dedication and the quiz. This week's show is dedicated to none other than Craig Foster. Craig has released his book, Foz on Football.
Foz on Football, what a absolutely riveting piece of publication that is going to be.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because Eamon was first in the bookshop
To grab a copy.
To grab a copy. First in line. He has got a copy.
So has he actually read it yet?
Well, he had it clutched in his hand, sweating, sweaty palm. I can only imagine next week Eamon is going to give us a review of that book. In fact, I'll commit him to it. Review of Foz on Football, please.
The spiel on Foz on Football. And, I mean, like I said, what riveting information that's going to spew out, I guess. Richard, or a.k.a. Terry, you've got some mighty good things to say about Fozzie, I understand.
Oh, big fan, Lucy. Actually, I think he's the most boring person on Australian television. But
thank you.
I would like to know if the publishers actually, in their editing, did a count of the number of times technical appeared in throughout the book.
I would imagine
it's got to be there in every paragraph.
We could do that count.
No, but I will read it. I will give Fozzie the benefit of the doubt. Mm. And I will read it because I like a good book on football, and let's hope this is one.
And let's hope it's better than Les Murray's, actually. That was a topic of discussion that came up off-air between myself and Eamon and Paddy the other week, and, you know, what a book that was, again. Has anybody read that one?
I have read some of the book, and I must say, actually, what the most interesting part was about his childhood in Hungary and how they ended up fleeing Hungary as a family, which is a pretty amazing story. Mm-hmm. And for anybody to go through something like that is...
Very intense, but one of the things that Eamon actually said about it, and I am mocking it in a sense.
Mock away.
He actually said that a lot of the book was focused on a woman. Is that fact or fiction?
Several, I think.
Yes, I believe.
Or women.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I believe there are several women that feature in the book. Les having his own take on things. Now the quiz, which I'll give to you and you guys can think about during the news, is name an Australian team that has won the Oceania Club Championship.
So we're talking a long time back.
We're talking a long time. Look, I'll let you think about it.
Can I just quickly, before we go into the news, NSL, old NSL, anything to do with it?
Yeah, maybe. I don't want to give it away.
All right.
Right, news. Okay. Let's see. Well, let's start with 2 goals from Australia international Scott Chipperfield helped his Swiss club FC Basel to a big win. Not sure who against. Maybe it was the Grasshoppers of Zurich.
It might have been. One thing's for sure is Chippers is playing up front.
Or it could have been those young boys from Bern. You never know. According to the All Whites skipper Ryan Nelson, Gold Coast United and New Zealand striker Shane Smeltz could be one of the stars of the FIFA World Cup in
South
Africa.
Don't know about that.
Hat-trick against Italy in the second game. See it coming.
One thing I will say quickly before you move on, I don't want to interrupt too much, but, you know, it's one of those things where the guys that come down to the A-League, they do so well. You know, that they really are stars out on the main stage there. But once they go overseas and they start to really kind of have to go up against people who really know their football, that's when they start to lose their luster and you don't notice them on the pitch as much anymore. So it'll be interesting to see how he does in the World Cup.
Well, just fortunately, they only have Italy, Slovakia and is it Paraguay, I think, to contend with, so no problem.
Going against Ryan Nelson, it may be that no one notices Shane Smeltz.
Most likely so, and he'll eventually come back to the A-League again. So.
All right, moving swiftly along, South Melbourne FC was one of 4 foreign clubs to be included in the draw for this year's Singapore Cup, along with the 12 Singapore League teams.
Yeah.
Big move for South Melbourne.
I'm really excited about that because it means that our state league teams are actually being given an opportunity to get out there and do something.
Yeah,
so it's good.
Not by our own FFA, but we're relying on other countries.
No, exactly.
This next news item has intrigued me a little bit. If Ben Cousins had not been given an AFL lifeline with Richmond... I don't even know who Ben Cousins is. He may have had an avenue back into sport via the A-League, according to his former manager. Well, whoopee-doo.
I thought that was interesting and actually...
Albeit hilarious.
Yeah. Completely off the rails. I don't think Ben Cousins... Well, although I'm sure he's fit, but...
Well, if you don't know Ben Cousins for his performance on the pitch, you will know him for his off-the-pitch antics, and that's definitely one thing he's very good at.
Sure, right. So he could fit in with Chelsea, perhaps.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's
just say George Best and Ben Cousins had maybe the same sort of off-field consumption habits.
Right.
There you go. So now that's starting to come
George
into
Best,
perspective.
I remember one of his famous quotes was when he saw a London bus go past and it said, "Drink Canada dry." So he did. That's what he did. Okay, embattled A-League club North Queensland Fury says it has narrowed its search for a new coach down to 4 highly qualified candidates. High quality candidates. So that obviously can't include Frank Farina.
No, I want to know who they are. If anybody out there of importance is actually listening to the show, apart from my mum and dad, please phone in and tell us who these four candidates are.
We don't want people phoning in, Lucy. Yeah. There's barely enough time for us to talk.
I'm intrigued. I mean, who could these four candidates be? Are we talking someone within Australian shores, or have they brought somebody else in?
I think you've got Paul O'Connor.
Okay.
I think you've got Frank Farina.
Ugh.
And you've got the Adelaide and Sydney coach. What was his name?
Which Adelaide?
Yeah, Basque.
No... Cosmina.
John Cosmina. Really?
So we're still waiting, though, for the four high-quality candidates.
Yeah, we're still waiting.
You've rattled off three Australian has-beens, but...
Maybe I should have written the news differently.
No, that's fine. Eamon wouldn't be letting me get away with this if he was here. Okay, still on with the news. Forgive my pronunciation here. Gurumangi Singh, 24, will link up with Hart, Melbourne Heart from the 7th to 19 June in a bid to become the fourth Indian international to play for an overseas club. Now, there's a quiz. Name the three other. Jade North has ended his Korean nightmare and sealed a move to Norwegian Super League outfit Tromso. He was released on a free transfer by K-League club Incheon and will begin his planned resurrection at his new team just in time for the kickoff for the new season.
Interesting stuff, and probably such a big relief for Jade, who's obviously been going through quite a bit of drama in terms of being able to find a team. So good to see that he's finally settled. I'm sure he's feeling all the better for it as well.
Is it just in time for the Socceroos?
Don't know about that.
Me neither.
Don't know about that. I mean, in terms of the talent pool as to who Pim can actually pick for the Socceroos, we're very limited. So, you know, despite the fact that he may not be ready yet, it could be someone that he has to call on because there really isn't anybody else. Any fact to that, Terry?
I've no idea, but maybe if this Norwegian team played him up front and he scored a few goals, then he might be able to have a goal scorer in the squad.
I told you, he's going to have to fight off Scott Chipperfield for that role.
Ooh, and that'll be a tough one.
English Premier League side Everton has confirmed it will be travelling to Australia this northern summer for a three-game tour, culminating in a clash with A-League champion Sydney FC. This trip is the club's first to Australia since 1987, when the then English champion... played two games in Melbourne and one in Brisbane.
Interesting. What's that doing for the profile of Australian football here?
Well, who will Timmy Cahill play for? Are they playing against Australia?
I'm pretty sure he'll play for Everton.
Oh, okay, they're not playing. Okay.
I remember when
Man United came out and Bosnich was played a half with Man United and a half with Australia or something silly like that.
Yeah, look, when you have things like that, look, they're essentially on holiday.
Correct.
Taking the young players through their paces. I don't want to disparage... people that are keen to turn up to the game, but I don't think we'll be seeing the Everton full side.
So you just have. Okay. And Football Federation Australia Chairman Frank Lowy has described weekend comments from FIFA President Sepp Blatter, which praised the World Cup bid of Qatar, as a timely reminder of its task to bring the World Cup to Australia. But I think Sepp Blatter praises every single country that he visits when he goes there.
Probably. I think Sepp likes to be everybody's best friend, so that's probably his aim there. But also, I've got some Socceroos abroad news.
Two that I wanted to share.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't much going on in terms of, you know, over the weekend and things like that. But Mark Schwarzer, that was a performance to be praised, and praised it was. His efforts against Everton were absolutely outstanding. And ironically, Fulham went down 3-2, obviously, but... Schwartz's most notable saves were ironically from fellow Aussie Tim Cahill. So interesting there, a bit of fun.
And what a great end to the season for him in the Europa League final as well. Fulham, what a fantastic story.
Oh, it's just brilliant, isn't it?
I'll be getting up for that one.
Well done. And also, finally, Dario Vidicic came off the bench at halftime to score a goal for his side, MSV Duisburg in Germany in the 87th minute. Duisburg lost 3-2 against SC Paderborn. So, well done. Good to see that Dario's up there. And, you know, I'm pushing for him to make it to the World Cup. I think he could have quite an interesting role there.
He's got a chance, you know. He's one of the young players that's getting out on the pitch that isn't in a team that's divisions below their their first league. So he's got a fair chance. He's their future, dare I say, him and Tommy Orr.
Yeah, him and Tommy Orr. Yeah, what about Matthew Leckie?
Matthew Leckie got a yellow card in the Asian Champions League and won't be playing in the knockout phase.
Unfortunate for Matthew Leckie. And Eamon, he must be devastated.
I'm sure. That's where he's gone. He's gone to cry. So I'll just go back over the quiz, naming three Oceania champion or club champions.
Do we have to name one or all three?
Well, let's go for... There are three. You can name one.
Well, I'll go back from the most recent one, which I think, this is my stab at it, Sydney United, 2004 to 2005.
United or FC?
United. Come on.
No,
United.
It's Sydney FC. It was
what?
It was. It was Sydney FC in 2000... What was it? 2004?
2004 to 2005?
Yeah.
Oh.
That was still
A-League. Interesting. I've got Sydney United in my brain.
I know. I wrote that down wrong.
Well, then let me try and get this one. Wollongong Wolves.
Exactly correct.
Thank
Lucy
you.
Daly.
Thank you. I've had a go today, and here I am. Wollongong Wolves 2000 to 2001.
And the last club?
Terry?
Oh, no idea at all.
I believe the last club was South Melbourne in 1999.
Oh, there you go.
Yes,
there
it is. Yeah. Crazy. Don't give away our radio secrets. So moving on to the show proper, the Asian Champions League, Adelaide United, despite a loss to the Chinese team Shandong Luang, have topped their group.
Yep.
And moving into the knockout stage.
Well, we pretty much predicted that, I think. It was safe to say that they were going to do well. I mean, they were already feeling quite comfortable in their group anyhow. And so, you know, a must win was more so for them being able to actually play at home than anything else. So I think it's great to see them make it to the knockout stage. And, you know, it's a testament also to Aurelio Vidmar's coaching tactics as well.
That's what I think as well.
Mm.
Melbourne played horrendously.
Oh, of course they
almost
did.
Almost each and every time. They certainly didn't get past the group stage.
Mm-hmm.
They lost again, despite being brave in defeat. Why are victories so useless? They're playing again in next year's Champions League.
Mm.
They'll have qualified for that.
Yep.
What can they learn?
Terry, what do you think?
Well, clearly I think they need to improve their preparation for the Asian Champions League, and I don't know whether it's just a hangover from coming at the end of the A-League season and the players are all sort of, you know,
is it so much of a preparation thing than they're just absolutely not suited to Asian style football? I mean, I don't buy that
because, I mean, they play the best football in the A-League. They, mm-hmm. Yeah, they have done for the last few seasons. They got players like Hernandez, Archie Thompson, who I think, you know, are a comparable level to most of the Asian players that I've seen in the Asian Champions League. And
mm-hmm.
I can't put my finger on anything in particular, but you know, I hope that they do learn lessons and that they take it seriously, and next year they do progress beyond the group stage.
Mm. But again, it goes back down to Adelaide. They always, whenever they go to Asia, they do well.
It's
so I don't understand, what is it? If they're not doing well in the A-League, but they are doing well in the Asian Champions League, then that's... I'm telling you, it has to be something. I've got to go against you there, Terry, but it has to be something to do with the style of football.
It's the unknown. Sydney will also qualify for next mm-hmm. year's Asian Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be very interesting to see how Sydney, with that have had time to reshape their team because mm-hmm. a few players have left, they'll be able to pick players that can not only play in the A-League but also in the Asian Champions League.
Mm.
They've got a bit of money behind them. They've seen how Adelaide have played and how Melbourne have fared.
Mm.
Surely Sydney can do better in the
I mean, going off of the previous A-League, I mean, with the kind of formation and the way that Sydney play, I don't know if, in all honesty, from my point of view, that they've actually got the pace and the speed required to actually compete well in Asian football. You know, that they were really relying on their defence a lot in this past season. So, again, you know, Asian football, very quick and, you know, very fast-paced, and you've got to be able to bring the attack up to the fore. So I don't know if Sydney will have what it takes. Going off of their, you know, current team.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that, because they've got Brosk, who's relatively fast, and they haven't picked up a striker yet.
But Brosk
didn't get Fowler.
Brosk was really quiet this season. Would you agree with that? He had his glimmers of brilliance every now and then, but he wasn't as consistent.
Yeah,
very inconsistent.
Yeah, he's maybe a bit inconsistent, but he's still a very, very good player. Look, he's on the fringes of the Socceroos.
Mm-hmm.
He's fairly decent. I think it's all about the strike force that Sydney buy, and I think they will buy a strike force.
They need to buy a strike force. They've got nobody up front, if I'm honest. I mean, again, with Brosk, is he a goal scorer or is he more of a creator?
I'd like to see Coffey Denning next year. Hopefully we'll be back from injury, and he's got a bit of pace about him, and you know, a forward attack with Brosk, Danning, maybe one other, and then I'd like to see Nicky Carl, just if he does come in, but just behind them.
Back from Crystal Palace.
Then I think they will be competitive in both the A-League and the Asian Champions League.
Yeah,
but
I think it's all up for...
But I think we're on a learning curve with it as well. I mean, we're still very new to it. Look, frankly, and you know, I'm sure you two were the same. I mean, outside of Japan and Korea, we really don't know very much about any of the Asian teams, really, the standards of their leagues and
mm-hmm,
so on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're still finding our way in this competition. What is it? It's only two or three years now that Australian teams have been playing in the Asian Champions League. So we've got a long way to go.
Clearly, I agree.
Technically, we're not up to the standards of the Japanese and Korean teams, and I think China will probably in a few years' time will be overtaking us as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're at the moment, we do have the advantages over on the physical side of the game and the fitness and so on. But that's going to change too, and we need to adjust our playing style over the next few years to be able to compete.
I agree, very much so.
Talking about people learning and moving on, this weekend on Sunday, Hikari United of PNG no less, managed to beat the New Zealand champions Waitaki Kere and become champions of Oceania.
And this is, you knew a lot more about it than I did last week, Paddy. You were really championing the whole push for them to go ahead and actually win it. What does this mean for PNG now?
I think it's a great thing for PNG. I think it's a great thing for the Pacific. This is the first island nation. So this is the first nation outside of New Zealand and Australia that have won the Oceania Championship. It means it opens it up. It means that the little countries have a chance.
Mm.
So it's a massive, massive win, but it also... And it shows the impact that we've had by Australia leaving Oceania, not dominating. It used to be Australia and New Zealand. Now with just New Zealand there. New Zealand aren't the full package when it comes to football. There is a chance for these Oceania countries to really come through. It's fantastic stuff.
But, I mean, again, the question that I have about that is, I mean, I'm so glad that they have, and it's, like you said, it's starting to open up a lot more opportunities for those smaller countries to come in. But are they just those teams that, you know, that go up against the real big wigs, so to speak, and then just end up dropping off again, you know?
For a little while it will be. But look at rugby. Look at Fiji, Tonga, Samoa. These smaller countries do very, very well in rugby. It is possible for these island nations to become good sporting nations.
Rugby and football, two different things, though. Two very different things.
we'll leave it there. But I think, look, what I do want to say is
it's a good,
that was
good
a massive,
story.
Massive,
fantastic.
Massive, massive thing for Oceania and Hikari. Go Hikari.
Go Hikari, absolutely.
All right, now moving along, I have my quote ready, so if the music is ready to go.
The mic's got please.
I'm standing on the edge of the parallelogram, roaring behind our passivation. Seven load on heads, a terror squad, we open your eyes, for Christ's sake, pass me the ball.
Paddy time, and what music it is.
All right. The quote that I have here is from a local fan in South Africa. His name is Lindy Mwande.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quoting on Shakira's official World Cup anthem. Has anybody heard it?
I haven't actually heard it. That's why I was intrigued when you first mentioned it.
Near Post listeners, get onto it. Because apparently it's particularly awful.
Is it really?
Apparently so. And here is Lindy Mwande's quote on this.
Mm-hmm.
This is his feelings on the anthem. It is horrible. I'm not standing for it. I mean, what is our president doing about it?
What is our president doing about it?
This is how extreme he feels, Shakira's cut anthem, which is called Waka Waka, by the way.
Waka Waka. One question I do have, and this is a very serious question, will it ever be able to beat Ricky Martin's anthem? Dead serious.
Do you mean beat it for awfulness or beat it for brilliance?
Beat it for brilliance. Come on.
I suspect not. If this is getting this sort of reaction from local South Africans...
Well,
how will it stack up against the John Barnes rap in World in Motion?
That was a classic rap. That was a very, very good rap.
We've only had one review, but, I mean, what's the general feedback? I mean, have you heard... you've heard it yourself, obviously, Paddy.
No, I have not.
Oh, you haven't.
Heard it.
You haven't.
Because I managed to piece this together and I ran out of the office without managing to download it. Next week, I'm going to try and give you a review as best I can next to Foz on Football of the song Waka Waka by Shakira.
Well, how good are your reading skills? I mean, how big is this book? Will you be able to finish it in time for the next show?
Oh, no, Eamon's doing the book. I'm just doing the song.
Oh, Eamon's doing the book. Oh, brilliant.
All right, moving on World Cup-wise. We were going through the group talking about World Cup memories. Particular World Cup games in particular that made you fall in love with football, with World Cup. Terry, you have an example.
Well, yeah, I think Lucy mentioned the Uruguay World Cup qualifier, which was actually banned. We couldn't include that, but 1982 World Cup. That's probably my earliest memory of watching the World Cup.
Why?
On telly.
I want to know why.
Brazil 1982 team, the best team never to win the World Cup. Mm-hmm. They just played the best football. Zico, Socrates, Junior, Falcao, just names that rattle off the tongue. Adair. Mm. They just blitzed them. They should have won. They got beaten by Paolo Bloody Rossi in their quarterfinal. Killed the game. Typical Italians killing football.
Typical Italians killing football. Thank you very much.
developing a tactical super team that can dominate the World Cup.
That's right. But yeah, no, that Brazilian team were just awesome. Mm. They were just fab. Mm. The best team going forward I've ever seen.
Was that the first World Cup that you remember?
Yeah, pretty much. I think I can sort of remember staying up for the Argentina Holland final 4 years before that, but because it was South America and television broadcasts weren't so sophisticated, I don't remember that many games being shown live. But 82 in Spain, fantastic.
Wow. I wanted to go back to actually the current World Cup before we keep moving on. One thing that I wanted to ask you, Terry, is what your thoughts are on Pinverbeek, because I know that here on the Near Post that we've got our very reserved opinions of him. Mine is that, he should have been gone a long time ago. I know that Paddy is an avid fan, but Terry...
Avid fan, I've put him up as a god.
You've put him up as a god. Yeah. He's even, he's developed a shrine in his house.
I think Pim is the ultimate pragmatist, but... Look, let's frankly, watching the Australian team over the last couple of years, it's been a bit like watching paint dry at times.
Thank you.
But I think he's also constrained by the players he has available to him.
Very true.
So, I think we've got to get over the idea that, we don't have Viduka anymore. Kuehl is not the player that he used to be. Nicky Carl, much as I love him, probably isn't quite up to that international standard. So who else is he really?
But will
play?
He ever be? That's the problem. I mean, what age is Nicky coming up to now? Does anybody know?
He's getting close to 30, isn't he?
He's pushing 30, and I think his career has gone in terms of his ability to develop into a world-class player.
But back to Pinverbeek, I think he's done the job that he was asked to do, he's required to do, he qualified for the World Cup. Mm. I mean, my fear is that we'll actually come home pointless and without scoring a goal in the three games.
And that's the problem that I actually have.
But, I also think that we've got to be realistic about the players that we do have. They're basically essentially the same squad as we had 4 years ago, minus Viduka and minus a fit Harry Kuehl.
He got us to the World Cup, so that's the second World Cup with the Socceroos that I will see in my lifetime, and I'm just thankful for that. I do, worse than that, I don't fear it. I lose sleep over the fact that we might not take any points back from the World Cup.
Well, I've got a baby who makes me lose sleep, so I don't have to worry about the Socceroos making me lose sleep.
Look, I think it's interesting, and on a few more final notes before we actually go, my biggest problem with Pim has actually been, like what you said, Terry, that it's like watching paint dry. Yes, he has gotten us to the World Cup, but I just think it's been hanging by a tooth and a nail there. So, I mean, he's not producing...
What are you expecting, Lucy? Are you expecting to give the ball to Harry and watch him waltz through and then cross it to...
No, I disagree with... One thing I do disagree with is that, we don't have a Duke. I mean, was he really up to that much scratch when he was playing in the last World Cup
anyway?
You think so. Well, but again, Harry, it's 4 years on and I still think he's got a bit of the luster, but we can't just rely on two players to... On that note, we'll have to put an end to it there. Thank you both for joining us. Paddy, for hosting the show. Well done once again. Stay tuned for the Canberra Show with Peter Funnell, and as always, if you're going to the Near Post,
get there first.
Near Post, get there first. The Near Post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The Near Post, get there first. If it's for football news that you